Welcome to the News Drive at 5 Conversation Series. I am Patrick Reynolds. Thank you so much for joining us here on WSIC News Talk Radio. And I am alongside former mayor of the town of Huntersville and currently candidate for North Carolina House District Seat 98. Melinda Bales joins me in studio here in Cornelius. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I was thinking about, like, how are you, comma, pause, how to address you. And my first thought was mayor, but you're really not the mayor right now. Do you have a candidate, Bales? Melinda, how should we address you nowadays?
Melinda.
Melinda works.
Melinda works.
Okay. Melinda works. Properly, would you be candidate Bales? Would that be the formal aspect for this?
I guess it probably would be. I still have people call me Mayor Bales.
Sure.
And that's to be expected. But yes, right now it's candidate for House Seat 98.
I almost did that. That was my instinct as I paused a moment ago. How are you, Mayor? Yeah, okay. Candidate Bales. Melinda works just fine. Well, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time for us. Different path for you that you're taking. Former role as mayor, as we're dissecting right here, right now, but now a candidate for North Carolina House District 98. Let's start right there for the audience listening. District 98, where would your jurisdiction be? What does that encompass? Where is 98?
So District 98, that map is Davidson. So all of Davidson, okay. All of Cornelius, and about, I would say half of Huntersville. The new dividing line is Gilead Road. So anything north of Gilead and Huntersville-Concord Road, anything north of it.
Okay, so part of Huntersville, some of your old stomping grounds as mayor, so to speak.
That's right.
But some new districts as well. What are you doing to get to know the people? Because I imagine you know some of these folks quite well from your role as mayor, but new territory, new citizens that would be part of your community.
That's right. So just really getting out there and having conversations with folks in Davidson and in Cornelius, making lots of phone calls, and hopefully scheduling some meetings and sit-downs with folks as well, and just really introducing myself and letting they know me, but getting to know me.
Getting to know you better. Yeah,
that's right.
I would say that as well. Many people know who you are,
right?
But getting to know. So is that just some form of networking, getting out to public events and whatnot, and just putting yourself out there?
Absolutely.
Okay, brave girl.
You have to be brave to stick your toes into this, into politics.
And some thick skin, too.
That's right.
Let's go back. I was going to say go back in the Wayback Machine, but I didn't want to go that way. But let's just go back in time. Originally, before your role as mayor in Huntersville, you were on the Board of Commissioners, correct?
That's right. For 10 years.
10 years as a commissioner.
Yes.
If I may take you back to the beginning of that part of your life.
Sure.
That jump into politics, was that your first step into public service?
Yes.
And my next question, why?
Why?
What made you want to do that?
So you have to go a little bit way back, right?
Okay, keep going. Take me back.
Think 2008.
That time, I think, is imprinted on everybody's mind because of how the country went with our economy.
And in addition to it, my kids were in the largest elementary school in the state, and I was heavily involved in PTA and became PTA president-elect. And we started working together as a unit to say, why are our kids in the largest elementary school in the state? We had over 1,500 students. K through 2 were in the building at Torrance Creek Elementary School. 3 through 5 were outside in a village of trailers. And we started going to county commission meetings, school board meetings, town board meetings, advocating for a relief school. And what I found when I got to the Huntersville Town Board was the response of, well, we don't do education. And I thought, well, that's not good enough. Yes, you don't make choices in education, but you still should be advocating for your residents, especially for your youngest residents. And so I started going to those town board meetings, and I realized I was really interested in everything else. It wasn't just education that I was interested in. It was infrastructure. It was economic development. It was everything that created a quality of life for the citizens of the town. And quality of life doesn't just happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have to roll up your sleeves and you have to be part of solutions. And so I went to the town board meetings for about 2 years, and watching and listening and learning. And that's when I decided in 2011 to run for the town board.
So you went as a citizen, just mm-hmm. as a Huntersville resident, you just attended the town.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow. And I ended up getting onto the Greenway Commission. So I served on Huntersville's Greenway Committee, and chaired that committee for roughly a year,
mm-hmm.
and then ran for office.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you're on the commission. You're yep. on the Greenway Committee. Are you during that time? Are you aspiring to be mayor, or did that come further down
no.
the road?
No. Out of the gate, I was like, I don't want to be mayor. No, I want to create good policy. I want to make good decisions that benefit the whole. That was my goal. My goal was to diversify Huntersville's business sector so that we weren't solely a bedroom community to Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Because remember, I said 2008.
I remember it well.
Right? And I saw people losing their homes, and yeah. Their homes were being foreclosed on, their jobs were going away, and I thought, we have to do better. We just have to do better. So let me roll up my sleeves and be part of the solution.
So that really...
really was it.
I guess it was a call to serve. And did doors just keep opening up for you, new opportunities, from the commission to the Greenway Commission, mm-hmm. to roll as mayor?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Greenway Committee and then running for the town board, because the Greenway Commissions are appointed by the town board. And then the town board, and I became mayor pro tem for a number of cycles, number of terms. And then decided, when Mayor Annarella chose not to run for re-election, I thought, I've been doing this for 10 years. It's probably about time I step up.
So how many terms did you serve as mayor for Huntersville?
I served one term as
mayor. Okay. I've known you just all this time, Mayor Bales.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And from there, now you're in this new path. You do not seek re-election as mayor. What was the calling for the House candidacy?
Well, in my 12 years of service, I've done a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I've worked in economic development. I co-chair the Lake Norman Education Collaborative. So partnering businesses in schools and nonprofits and helping students in workforce opportunities with CTE. I don't know why, but I served on the North Carolina League of Municipalities Board of Directors, and I co-chaired their Legislative Policy Committee. And in that mix, working with municipalities from across this great state and understanding that whether we're small communities, medium-sized communities, large communities, we're all facing the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so pulling the communities together, creating a legislative policy agenda that met the needs of municipalities from across this great state gave me that opportunity to also be in Raleigh advocating on behalf of municipalities, having conversations and building relationships in Raleigh. And so I looked at that and thought, there's a lot of things that happen in a Dillon Rural state. And those decisions happen in Raleigh.
Mm.
So whether it's economic development, education, what have you, it all happens in Raleigh.
Raleigh's the place.
It is.
Not just Huntersville, which she's done a great job at. We've got more with Melinda Bales on the News Drive at 5. I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to the News Drive at 5. Patrick Reynolds taking you home here on WSIC News Talk Radio. Thank you so much for sharing your ride home with us. I am sitting with former mayor of Huntersville, current candidate for North Carolina House District 98, Melinda Bales, alongside chatting me up. So good to have you in studio. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with us here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great fun.
I was taken back to 2008, and I think most people remember where they were because that recessional impact
Yes.
that affected everybody. That is how I actually wound up in radio. That
Really?
is how that is why I'm doing it. It was the recession. I don't know if you and I have sat and talked about this, but at the time I was a NASCAR mechanic and pit crew member in
Really?
2008. Yeah, that was my career before radio. As people know about motorsports, or maybe not, I might educate them right now, is motorsports runs on the advertising budgets and marketing budgets of all those companies that are stickered on the car. During a big recession like that, what is the first department all those big companies axe?
Marketing.
Bingo. They axed all that, and I remember that we called it Black Monday. It was the day after the final race of the season in 2008. Several thousand of us lost our jobs. All my friends in my phone that I used to call, for a job, and they would call me for jobs and stuff. We were all out of work together. And I ran into a guy. Excuse me, I should back this story up a little bit. I was networking or at a job fair, something like that. I want to say in Mooresville, Chamber of Commerce, possibly. I'm a little fuzzy on the memory right now. But I was looking for a job. That's what I was like. Just I didn't care about racing anymore. I was like, I'll go back to racing. I'll do anything I needed to get back to work. And I met a man, his name is Mike Garrity, and he said, "Have you ever tried radio?" I said, "No, I never have." He says, "Do you want to give it a shot?" I said, "Sure, why not?" By coincidence, he was starting an auto racing talk show. And here I was, an out of work NASCAR crew member, kismet. And where was he starting the show? Right here on WSIC
Oh,
News
wow.
Talk.
That's exciting.
So my radio career began in 2000. It was actually, I lost my job in 08. In 2010, I believe, if my memory's right, the spring of 2010 or winter of 2010, we started this talk show. I went to the studio and we did an audition like you and I are doing. We're not an audition here, but we mocked up a show, see how it went. He said, "Let's do it." And the next week we started it. A little while later, I joined the morning show cast as a newsreader sidekick role. And that's where one show led to another podcast, led to hosting the concerts and events around Lake Norman, which you and I know each other
Yes.
from, is being on stage. I've introduced you a bunch of times in different events here.
Right.
But yeah, I'm taking up your time here. But yeah,
No,
that's
I think it's great. Something I didn't know about you.
yeah, a little bit of learning. We go to entertain and educate our audience here. But that's how I wound up. It's like a weird, just down the road, I said, "Oh, I guess I can do this," so to
Right.
speak. Kind of funny. Yeah. So you back to you. I'm taking up your time here. The candidate for North Carolina House District 98. I guess fortunately that you're not in a position that you need you not in a position where the primary is a part of your run. You're just in the general
Right.
election in November. Is that b because no one else has stepped up to also run? Or how does that work? The
Right.
layman is me. How does this work in politics?
Well, anyone can file to run for office, and so no one filed to run
Okay.
other than myself.
Okay. Now, did this opening occur, I believe, correct me here, because a few other dominoes fell with other politicians moving on to other roles and whatnot.
Right. So, Representative Bradford, who currently holds this seat, made the decision to run for a different office. Right. So he's running for Congress. And when he made that decision, I really looked around and thought, my children are grown and they're off doing their things. My husband is retired. It seemed like if I was ever going to make that jump, now is the right time, right? And then, in addition to that, to be frank, if I didn't think I could make a difference, I wouldn't have ran. I would have ran for mayor again. But I do believe I can make a difference, and therefore, I throw my name in the
There you
hat.
go. It seems like a recurring pattern with you. You
It
think you can
does.
make a difference, so you step up to the plate.
If I think I can make a difference, I'll step up.
So have you talked to John Bradford about his motivation and his inspiration for pursuing another office? Auditor, I believe, is he? Is he?
No, he is running for U.S. Congress.
Okay, Congress. Yes. Is so have you spoken to him about what inspired him to make the move?
You know, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't had that conversation with him. But I'd venture to say he would, I would venture to say it's the same for the same reasons. If he thinks he can make a difference, he's going to step out there.
Mm-hmm. That's why I find this calling in politicians. There's usually a, I guess I would say that there's a calling with folks like yourself that are holding office, a calling to serve. But it's always interesting to hear where that came from. There's got to be a spark that lights that fire in all of you.
Yeah, I think so. I also find it interesting, too, when I first decided to run for the town board, one of my aunts, my mother passed away in 97 at 49 of colon cancer.
Mm, young.
And yes, very young. And when I told my family I was going to run for an elected position, you know, the response was, you know, your mother wanted to do that. She always wanted to make a difference that way. And
really?
I thought, yes, and I didn't know it. And I didn't know it until about 2012 that that was the case. So I found that, you know, a little bit serendipitous, if you will.
That was my next question. I was like, you didn't know about that
no,
at all.
I
but
did
she
not.
Obviously talked about it with her friends, family, other folks.
Right.
Not you.
Well, and to be fair, I lived far away. You know, I didn't live in East Tennessee at the time. When my husband and I got married, he was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shipped out overseas. We lived in Naples, Italy for 3 years.
Wow.
And then to Norfolk, where he served, and he was stationed. And then when he got out, we stayed there for a few years before we moved down here.
And East Tennessee, is that where you're from,
yep.
you grew up?
I'm from Johnson City, Tennessee, just right over the mountain from Asheville.
That's not that far
and
if, from where
And you know where Bristol Motor Speedway
I've
is.
I've been there many times.
The Tri-Cities.
Yeah, I often wound up at a hotel in Johnson City. It's so close to the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
We went up there, and I have been there in the heat of summer and been dehydrated. I've also seen snow at the Speedway at Bristol, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You ever go to the race there?
I have never been to the race at Bristol. I haven't. I've been. Mm. I've seen the lights at Christmas.
No.
I've driven the laps.
I've never seen lights at Christmas. I always thought that was something fun to do. The one here at the Speedway is pretty cool. At Charlotte Motor Speedway. You been there?
To
that?
I have.
Gosh, this is the News Drive at 5 conversation series, and I'm learning all kinds of things about you. So, what you got? Your husband? You got married? Your husband in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
He's stationed in Italy.
Yep.
What brought you to the Lake Norman area? How'd you land here?
So, when he got out of the Navy, he was working in Newport News. I was working in Newport News. I was a quality manager and trainer back in the day, and he got a job offer from this little company, this little bank called Nations Bank. That became Bank of America.
Mm-hmm. So I know that
right?
name from
you know
somewhere.
That, name
yeah.
that brought us down here, and he worked in the in IT in the banking industry for a while, and then transitioned to more tech companies. Like, well, his last job was with Apple. So
okay,
you know,
wow.
In the tech world, but that's what brought us down here was Bank of America at the time.
So he's not a teenager that I need to call for tech assistance when my laptop and my phone go south.
No, he's not a teenager. No.
Yeah. Where did he go to school? Where did he learn his craft?
In the Navy. He started in the Navy and then took courses after when he got out of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a self-learner for sure.
Okay. How about your own education? Where did you go to school?
So I went to East Tennessee State, right there in Johnson City. And was a business major. I admit I didn't finish my degree. I got married and shipped overseas.
Okay.
And thought I was going to come back to it and hadn't. Doesn't mean I won't. I still love to learn. I'm learning hands-on.
I was going to say, from your experience, it seems like, much like my radio career, you sort of just kind of discover and stumble it. You didn't major in political science. I was pretty sure of that. Yeah.
No, I did not.
When you were in college at the time, did you have any thoughts, any interest at all about learning about politics or how public service went
No.
That point of your life? Did
just
you have
no?
No.
No.
College. Yeah.
Yeah. Did. Yeah. No.
You did the college stuff.
Well, it was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do and what I was interested in. And I'm interested in so many things. You know, that jack of all trades, if you will. I enjoy learning. Mm. I enjoy rolling up my sleeves and finding solutions to problems. That's and it could be from Greenway figuring out how that right. works to, you know, how are you going to diversify a business sector to now it's looking at, oh my goodness, how are we going to address healthcare? You know,
good point.
Healthcare is a huge issue in our state and across this country, and we need to be able to tackle it. You know, I just recently had read a statistic that in the next 20 to 25 years, that the baby boomer generation, as they're retiring, the needs on the healthcare system are going to continue to be great. We've got to figure that out. And it'd be great if we could figure that out sooner rather than later.
Would your new office, assuming you win in November, would you have some authority and some muscle to influence that here in the state?
I think as a freshman, you know, coming in as a freshman, it's you're in learning mode. I would love to have that opportunity to find the niches, you know, whether it's economic development, workforce development and education or infrastructure. You know, I think those things have been my wheelhouse for quite some time. And I want to continue that work.
More with Melinda Bales coming up. News Drive at 5 Conversation Series rolls on WSIC. Welcome back to the News Drive at 5 Conversation Series. Patrick Reynolds here, taking you home on this WSIC News Talk afternoon. I am sitting alongside former mayor of Huntersville, candidate for North Carolina House District 98. Melinda Bales is with us. It is so fun talking to you.
It really is. This is has been a great conversation. I'm learning a lot about you, Patrick.
Likewise, Melinda. Inside joke, I got her name correct. Not everybody does all the time. I understand that. During the commercial break, we chatted off air, and you had a really neat story about a babysitter.
Yes.
Tell me. Tell our audience.
So growing up, our next door neighbor, Miss Betty.
Miss Betty.
Was my babysitter, right? My sister and I, and my little brother. And her husband was Brownie King. And I asked you, I said, does that name ring a bell at all? And you're like, it does. But he was a race car driver for NASCAR way back in the 60s. And I think he raced in the Daytona.
Yeah.
I did not know this until I was an adult. And I thought, how in the world did I not know he was a race car driver as a child? That's kind of cool.
I believe in, I was strolling through the Rolodex in my head. I did not look any of this up. No Google, no phone. But Brownie King, I believe he was a member of Racers Reunion, which, if I can expand on the story from the last segment, when I was co-hosting this talk show on WSIC for auto racing, another producer called and put me on air at another, I guess, another studio, which is, this is the day of, you figure the time of 2010. He had this great idea called internet radio, which we all know now is podcasting. It's just broadcasting over the internet. Right. I go, wait a minute, radio? And it was called Racers Reunion. And the Racers Reunion Network, which Brownie King, I believe, was a member of. And it started, their foundation was a talk show that dealt with the history of stock car racing. And I believe Brownie King raced on Daytona Beach, literally the sands of Daytona Beach, before the Speedway was built.
Isn't that the coolest thing?
Yeah, it is. It is. Those Brownie King, look them up. But before the Speedway was built and opened in 1959, before that, the cars would race on the beach. They would go north on the sand about 2 miles, hang a left, because it's still NASCAR, we're hanging left-hander,
right,
and then head south on pavement on A1A for about 2 miles, get to the south side, hang another left, and go back up the beach, and that was a lap.
Yeah.
That was a lap at Daytona. And that's where, you know, in the 50s, that's where the history of the sport came from. Before then, they built this big, bright, shiny, massive super speedway the same size as Indianapolis, and these stock car drivers went there and went, are you kidding me? Brownie King, you and Brownie King. That's amazing.
I know.
That's
fascinating. I've always found it fascinating. It's such a kind soul.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, great memories. I hope you make some more good memories in this election season. What is, I guess, what are, plural, your platforms? What are you running on? What are your strengths? What would you like to accomplish in Raleigh for District 98?
So looking back at what I've worked on the last 12 years, it really doesn't change, right, much. Mm-hmm. I really want to work on continuing to diversify our business sector in this district, across the state. I want to be able to make a difference in career and technical education, working with the public schools, our public charter schools, and community colleges and universities to ensure that we are developing a skilled group of citizens in our community so that they have the ability to work, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that having a skilled labor force is critical to the success of North Carolina. And in addition to that, infrastructure. And infrastructure comes in many forms, you know, road infrastructure, energy infrastructure, mm-hmm. Internet infrastructure, water, sewer infrastructure, those things that make quality communities happen. We've got to be able to connect our state, you know, from the mountains to the coast. And, you know, I always have felt like when we tell businesses who relocate here in Huntersville, Cornelius, and Davidson, that we can provide them with a skilled workforce, we mean it. We keep our promises, and we work toward making sure that those students, whether they're in middle school, high school, college, that they're prepared to take on the employment opportunities that are right here in their backyard. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, isn't that what most of us want for our families, is that our children would be able to live, work, and raise their families, if they so choose, in their hometown?
Mm-hmm. Since Huntersville, or part of Huntersville, falls under District 98, is there something that you can make an impact on Huntersville in District 98 as the House Chair that you could not do as mayor? I guess, is there jurisdictions and responsibilities? I guess they work together, but they're separate offices, separate issues. Is there something you can and cannot do, just mayor versus the District 98?
Well, I think the bigger thing is creating policy. Remember, as a Dillon Rule state, North Carolina, the General Assembly creates the framework, if you will, in which your local government entities govern. And so whether it's working toward a better curriculum to make sure that the curriculum, the CTE curriculum that our students are utilizing in our schools is industry standard, mm-hmm. or not. You know, I'll give you an example. Years ago, so North Mac High School has an automotive program, and right. it's an incredible automotive program. But one of the, and I'm not going to mention the dealership's name, but they came in and they took a tour of the facility, and they said, you know, that's what you're this piece of equipment is what you're teaching the students on. And they were like, yes. And they go, but that's not industry standard. And so if they come to me, I'm going to have to retrain mm-hmm. them. So, yeah. you know, that wonderful dealership turned around and a few weeks later delivered a piece of equipment that was industry wow. standard for those students to work on.
Fantastic.
Right. That's the thing that we've got to get to, that not all curriculum is the same. You know, you can have culinary in one school and culinary in another, but one may have a state-of-the-art kitchen and with all the bells and whistles. The other might have, you know, a microwave and a mm-hmm. and a cooktop. We need to make sure that our kids, our students, are working and learning on industry standard equipment, mm-hmm. and that's something that I would love to see across this great state.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, I believe you were part of the PTA as your mm-hmm. first step, sort of serving the community. And during your conversation, you brought up different points on your role and your platform. Education constantly comes up with you. Mm-hmm. That must be, or definitely, obviously, is a very important piece for you in life, is improving education. Were the seeds of that planted in the PTA board?
You know, I would say yes, but I think it's also it's a thing of being a mother too, right? Uh-huh. I mean, you yeah. want your children to have a quality education. And in North Carolina, our Constitution grants it, right?
Yeah.
It's part of our North Carolina Constitution that all students have access to education, and it needs to be a quality one. And so regardless of whether you're choosing, a family chooses homeschooling or charter schools or private schools or public traditional public schools, the quality of the education needs to be there across the board.
Mm-hmm. Old saying, I could take you to McDonald's or take you to Ruth's Chris. Either way, I fed you dinner. But there's a,
but there's a vast difference
in
that's
that.
That's right.
Will this new role in District 98, will that address... And we're coming up on a break here, so this is, might be a loaded question. We can continue it after if you can't finish it. But would that be able to address the growth? Because, you know, roads, traffic, infrastructure, obviously a hot topic here on all towns around Lake Norman, not just Huntersville. Right. Will this new role help you establish some growth parameters?
I think that it has the ability. Number one, we've got to figure out how we're going to continue to fund our roads and make sure that those projects are getting done, that we cannot continue to kick the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things we've got to address is that gas tax and how we fund infrastructure.
Let's expand on that after the break. News Drive at 5 rolls on WSIC. Welcome back to the News Drive at 5. This is our conversation series. I am Patrick Reynolds, taking you home here at WSIC News Talk Radio. I'm alongside Melinda Bales, running for office, been in office, former mayor. Big dreams out there. I think not your dreams, but you're looking to make more of an impact.
Absolutely.
With the new role.
Absolutely. I'm solutions based.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about solutions right before the last break. I know you think you sped up your answer for that a little bit. We can expand on that a little bit with the growth that is just around Lake Norman, not just Huntersville, all the towns. Goodness, Charlotte itself, every town around the lake has experienced growth.
Right.
A big challenge to keep up with that or stay ahead of it or, you know, battle. It's a good problem to have because it's a beautiful place to be. That's why I moved here.
Right. That's why most of us moved here. You know, Huntersville was only about 5,000, I think, in 95, and Cornelius was larger than Huntersville. Davidson was larger than, and now that has all flipped. But, you know, growth is inevitable when you live in such a beautiful space, right? And we just haven't been able, the state has not been able to keep up with the infrastructure. So we've got to fix a few things. You know, we've known for a long time. If you've been around the block for any length of time, you have heard that the gas tax isn't going to be able to fund all the infrastructure needs of a growing state. It's not just Lake Norman; it's happening across the state, and so we've got to figure that out. As engines become more efficient, we have to figure out how we are going to be able to fund our infrastructure across the state.
I believe this was explained to me. I think it was Lake Norman Chamber President Bill Russell explained this either on air or might have been a one-on-one with him. But in 2020, when the pandemic hit, we were all told to stay home. And obviously, fuel consumption went straight down. But the fuel tax is what the state was relying on for that to pay for the growth. We obviously got behind the eight ball at that time. Does the state stay behind the eight ball, or is there some way to catch up and recoup what we lost there?
You know, the state does stay behind the eight ball. And part of that reason is we don't build infrastructure until there's a need.
Right.
You know, other states may build the infrastructure first and then allow development around it. That's not the way we work. We work just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to figure out a better way to get our infrastructure addressed.
There is a project in Mooresville that was a news story here on the News Drive at 5. You may know about the East-West Connector.
Mm-hmm.
It's around the Langtree area. So it's a little bit north of Huntersville, around exit 31 in that area, and it's going to go to 115. There's acreage there that has, the zoning has been changed on it. It's approved for development, and there's plans for development. However, the first thing they are going to do is expand the roadway. There's going to be this new connector, and they're putting the infrastructure in before the development. This seems to be a new idea here or around this area.
Right.
Is that something that can be applied to Huntersville or District 98?
Is doing a different way of doing things? You know, I think there's a variety of different ways to do it, right? For example, the widening at exit 25 in front of North Cross between 21 and 115, the town fronted the money to the state, and then the state paid it back once the project was complete. Not allowed to do that anymore.
So, like a loan kind of thing here?
Right.
here's 20
communities,
bucks.
Municipalities aren't allowed to build it and then recoup if it's on the STIP. And I think that's something we should be looking at. Why not? Because roads, the cost of roads, it's only going to increase.
Yeah.
It will never decrease. Mm-hmm. So we've got to figure out ways to look outside the box and that we're currently doing things, mm-hmm. right? And figure out ways to move the needle on behalf of the residents that we serve.
In interviewing other politicians, local folks that are holding office or running for office, that was framed to me, because I'm the layman too. I don't understand, and I may ask very elementary questions of folks, because I literally, just as a citizen, you don't really know the nuts and bolts
right.
of this. And one of the guys, Jason Sain, Jeff McNeely, somebody like that, up north in Iredell County, said to another citizen, not to be sarcastic, but it would have helped if you called me 20 years ago and let me know that you're coming. We could have built the roads and the schools and the police department for you. Because it takes, I guess, so long to really get a road built.
A quick road project?
Right.
7 years.
Yeah.
A quick one.
Quick.
Okay. I mean, you have to remember, you've got to go through the property acquisition phase, and then you've got to go through the design phase. Well, actually, you do the design first, then you go into property acquisition. But you've got to figure out, you know, putting out all the surveyors, and then you've got to move utility lines.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or any utility, underground or above ground. So all of those things have to be done. So it is not a easy feat, and it's certainly not for the faint of heart.
Not just to gas up the bulldozer and let's plow it away. Yeah.
No, unfortunately.
I moved to this area in 2001. I'm a Mooresville resident, and I believe the widening of Highway 150 has been talked about since I've lived here. It's now 2023 as we record this interview, in case you're listening to it years down the road.
Right.
the miracle of technology. And it goes forward, there's progress, and then delays. I've seen buildings built and then closed and then knocked down in that time frame along 150, planning for the widening, and now the project is currently delayed. Huntersville in your area must face the same kind of stories.
Highway 73. So yeah. I always consider 150 and 73 they're the sister.
They're cousins, sisters, something.
And you know, I moved here in 99,
mm-hmm.
and I'll never forget it. We built our first home off of 73. And I remember vividly asking, before we signed on the dotted line, when's this road going to be widened?
Uh-huh.
Any day now.
Uh-huh.
And the state's working on it. Well, that was
24 years ago.
Actually, yeah, come July, it'll be 25. So, yes.
Yeah. Difficult to handle the growth, because nobody has to inform you or the governor or anybody else in this state, hey, I'm coming.
Yep.
Boost up your roads.
Well, and then you add to it, those roads are connector roads across counties.
Sure.
Right? I mean, 73 alone is Lincoln County, Mecklenburg County, Cabarrus County.
Right.
So it goes through. So it really is a connector for the state and for the region.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't keep kicking the can, whether it's 73 or 150.
Sometime in our lifetimes would be great, I think, if you could get to
I
that.
I am bound and determined.
Candidate for North Carolina House District, seat 98. For anyone in our audience listening to this interview, basic question I've asked everyone on this series, why should they vote for you?
Why should they vote for me? I'm a doer.
Mm.
Right? I'm a workhorse. I roll up my sleeves and I get to work. I'm willing to work with anyone to find the right solution that benefits as many people in the whole as possible. And I think that you see that over the course of the last 12 years, right? Mm-hmm. As I've held elected office, I'm thoughtful, I'm purposeful, and I want to do what's in the best interest of the people that I represent and serve.
Mm-hmm. I've seen you out there a lot. I will say that in the time I've known you, just out there amongst the community, listening to them. That flows into my next question. Okay. What are you hearing from the community as their chief complaints, concerns? What do you hear a lot of? I'm assuming it's going to be the traffic and the growth issue.
Traffic constant. Growth is always, and it will be, as we are the north part of Mecklenburg,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, and Mecklenburg is going to continue to grow. I think it's incumbent upon the leaders across the region, whether it's in the local level, and when I say local, I mean municipal, county, school board, and the state level, to look at our region and understand that it is one of the largest economic drivers in this great state. And we've got to address the issues, because the fact is, if you want business to continue to happen in North Carolina, then you have to address all the ancillary issues mm-hmm. around economic viability. Mm-hmm. And that can, like I said earlier, healthcare, we've got to be able to make sure that we're helping families, your average North Carolina family, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just read a statistic that 36%, I think it's 36, it may be 32, but in that realm, percent of North Carolina families' income goes directly to child care. That's an issue that we have got to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to.
That's a lot there.
It's a lot.
Yeah, just what you're hearing, the growth. Everybody hears that child care, health care as mm-hmm. well.
Yes.
Okay. So your role in the House District, you would have the muscle or the leverage, so to speak, to have an impact on that?
That would be my goal. Okay. We are all subject to what committee assignments we get once we get there. But I certainly believe that everything is connected. There's not one piece that sits out by itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're all connected, and it has to work well in order to keep that engine moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, as former mayor of Huntersville, we'll end this on a very high positive note. There's music at Brookdale Village tonight.
Awesome.
You gonna go out?
Absolutely.
Okay. Good part. I've seen you out there.
Come see me. I'll wave.
You will wave. I will wave from the stage back to you.
Sounds good.
It'd be good to see you there. Melinda Bales, candidate for North Carolina House District 98 on the docket, and it's an election year. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. I appreciate you coming into the studio letting our audience get to know you a little better and what you stand for.
Thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Appreciate you being here. News Drive at 5, conversation series here on WSIC News Talk Radio. Patrick Reynolds taking you home. Thanks to all of you for tuning in tonight. Stay tuned. We'll have more on the News Drive at 5, as well as our conversation series moves along the calendar. Take care, everybody. We'll see you later.